You're listening to Lavender Louisville, a Racing Louisville podcast.
Hello and welcome back to Lavender Louisville, the podcast dedicated to Racing Louisville FC. I'm Joe Havelda.
I'm Cody Ruth.
On today's show, Racing earns its first win of the season in style in front of a record crowd. We dissect a couple transfer rumors and look ahead as Big Perp takes its show on the road. Let's get into it. All right, before we get into the game that everyone wants to talk about, we have to break down the game that everyone's already forgotten about. Up first is the 0-0 draw at home to the San Diego Wave. There were no Taylor Swift concerts happening anywhere, so Alex Morgan braved the trek to Louisville and managed to survive. Cody, you want to break it down for us?
I love that you phrase it that way, because there were a couple times that it looked like she was having a rough day. But leading off, the Wave really did dictate the lion's share of chances. In the first 15 minutes, Lund had already made three saves. A couple of them were pretty routine, but kind of a scarier one in the eighth minute. By that point, I made a note that we looked like we were actually winning the midfield, but we lose possession in fast transition. Somehow, I don't think that's going to be the last time I write that note this year. but by the 15th minute, there were two potential calls that could have gone to the Wave's benefit that didn't get called, which is kind of normal that early in the game, you know, to see a couple that are close but not called. And the reason I bring this up, in order to keep myself entertained watching this game, because there were stretches that were not entertaining, I decided to go through and call or no call. I went through and checked and went back and reviewed every potential foul call in the game. And a lot of them were very valid no calls. I mean, honestly, I want to put together a video of Savannah McCaskill with the banana slip noises every time she falls instead of trying on the ball. And the reason I bring this up now, those two no calls were the very last time that a potential call against Racing wasn't called. Every other time in the game, the Wave got the foul. Now that we're done with that, in the 17th minute, it was actually my defensive play of the game. Flint sprints back to cover a Jakobsen run at goal. And I tell you what, watching Malay and Jakobsen square up was primetime soccer. It was great.
I had the same note. I really enjoyed the battle between those two.
But on that one, she got in behind Malay and, you know, got past Flint, but Flint made the effort, got out. And even though she didn't get the ball away, she diverted Jakobsen enough for Malay to come in and cover. Mm-hmm. And she was eventually dispossessed. And just that run and canny play on the ball, because, I mean, that's a prime time for drawing a card, but it was just a really great defensive sequence. We got our first decent chance in the 21st minute. Sheridan was forced to punch the ball out. In the 34th minute, Malay sees a yellow that's kind of dodgy, but she just did not get the ball. I mean, she came up behind and tried to toe poke in, and well, when you only get the player and they fall down, that it's certainly a foul, and she was close enough to goal. Well, yeah, yellow maybe. In the 42nd minute, Lund does a really good job vacating the ball under pressure. I mean, by now I'm pretty sure that they probably put her through her paces, having, you know, man on situations, mm-hmm, to break the, I don't know, maybe jitters that she was having last year. Because Now she's cool as a cucumber.
Mm-hmm.
In the 45th minute, some of the most entertaining blatant time wasting I've ever seen as the Wave march three different players over a dead ball. And that shady shenanigans, honestly, I think it kind of reflects the Wave's play style. I mean,
I have plenty to say about that. I think it all comes from head coach Casey Stoney.
I would
not just the time wasting and the blatant diving with minimal contact. I've said for years that the reason I like women's soccer in general, not just this league, but women's soccer in general, is they don't go down easily like in the men's game. And yeah. Casey Stoney has gotten this team to do the opposite. So you see this, you see them going down, and if they don't get the call, then they start whining and crying to the ref because they feel like they should be entitled to it because they fell over. And I just, it doesn't fit this league, especially.
Yeah. And 45 plus one, Turner and DeMello were absolutely swarming the opposing keeper, Sheridan. It was great. I mean, I think they really felt there was blood in the water there. And it wouldn't be the first time Sheridan had Lavender running up on that game.
I like watching those two high press together.
Yeah. So we went into the half in a significantly better position than we started it. We were being more confident on the ball. We were getting more possession. We were sustaining possession for longer. Because those first 15 minutes, it was all Wave. And after those first two no calls, Racing had three fouls called in their favor and five ignored compared to the eight calls that the Wave got. And Wave turned the pressure up fast in the first few minutes of the second half. In the 47th minute, they just waved the white flag and took the short corner. They didn't even bother sending it into the box anymore. We take it and run it back the other way, and we get a great chance on our end. So it's really encouraging that we're not allowing gaps of time. I mean, watching the beginning of the first half had me kind of worried, but we come straight out and right away, you know, we withstand the initial pressure and take the game back. In the 49th minute, Sears comes in pressuring Sheridan. In the 50th minute, there's a perfect example of something that I was talking about in the America to Cali game, where Wright and Ersig weren't quite on the same wavelength. But they had a sequence where Ersig and Wright are defending the attacker coming in. Ersig is closer to the attacker on the right-hand side facing left. Wright is further away on the left-hand side facing right. So there's nowhere for the attacker to go that isn't covered. So that little out-of-sync moment that you saw in the preseason, they've put that to bed. Mm-hmm. In the 51st minute, Sears again threatening with a good shot. I have to say, bringing her on at halftime was a masterstroke. Absolutely a terror down that right side.
Mm-hmm.
In the 57th minute, Emily Van Egmond, you got howled. Just absolutely laid out. Love it every time. And the 65th minute, Sears with a really good give and go with Fisher. And the 66th minute, Sheridan is again being hunted, this time by Barr. I really like how we were pressuring the keeper all game. The 71st minute, Racing scores a goal, but it was called back for obstruction.
Boo.
Kayla Fisher was in the mouth of goal for some reason. I absolutely cannot figure out why she was why she was there. I mean, she was very cleanly offsides, and there's nothing that she could have done to affect the ball without getting a call.
You know what annoys me the most about that?
What's that?
Kalen Sheridan wasn't getting to that ball, whether Kayla Fisher was there or not.
I'm inclined to agree, because, I mean, I went back and watched it even past the VAR. I mean, Sheridan was just beat. And so we did not win the game because our player was in a position that I cannot think of a valid reason for her to be in.
No, and that's why I'm still very, very frustrated by this, because was it the correct call? Yes, but it's a judgment call at the point that the player offside has to be interfering with the play. I don't think Kaylin Sheridan was getting to that ball regardless, which means she wasn't interfering.
But that it wasn't the offside part that was the issue. It was blocking the keeper, which is weird that you never really see that call. But it is actually in the rules of the game that you can't stand right next to the keeper and block them from making a play at the ball.
Well, sure you can, because they do it on corners all the time. It's you can't do it if you're in an offside position when either a pass or a shot comes in. So the offside is relevant there. But what I'm saying is I don't think she did block her, because I don't think Kaylin Sheridan was getting to that anyway. I'm splitting hairs here because I wanted that goal, and I wanted the storyline of that goal being scored by a former San Diego Wave player.
Yeah.
But I'm with you that she had no business. Kayla Fisher had no business being there.
All right. That little bit of bitterness. Sears with another good run, called back for offsides, which she very much was. I may have been a little low on my estimate for offsides this year, by the way. In the 79th minute, Borges gets her first minute of the year and gets to work immediately. Okay. In the 80th minute, Howell pulls a yellow. It's bound to happen constantly. In the 81st minute, only 2 minutes after coming on, Ari has a fantastic chance, but can't really do anything with it. In the 84th minute, Lundqvist draws a yellow, which, watching it, she should have been called for a foul before it got to that point, because Millay was trying to get by her, and you could see where she's reaching out and trying to trip Millay with her arm. I mean, just the first bit of bad sportsmanship, and then just stood up and shoves her.
Well, Kayla Fisher.
Fisher. Damn it. You're 100% right.
But I'm with you on that, because they gave the yellow to Lundqvist for pushing Kayla Fisher to the ground, but then it was a free kick for San Diego, which I did not understand. Because, like, Kayla was down on the ground. She's still trying to, like, get the ball and whatnot. And they ended up stopping play and then calling a foul on Fisher. Yep. And freaking, like, I didn't understand that one at all.
The only thing that I can think of in that sequence is after Fisher was already tripped, but before play had stopped, and she kind of rolls or scrambles towards the ball into the other player.
Yeah.
That's it. But by then she had already been fouled. So
I mean, at that point, let him play. Like, whatever it was on either side wasn't that even that big to stop the play. Anyway, I don't know. It's NWSL refereeing, man.
Rebecca Pagan is the referee. I usually don't make it a point to go out and find that information, but this one I was salty about. In the 87th minute, my offensive play of the game, that Ari comes off with a shot that would absolutely have ripped a lesser keeper. And it was painful because there was, no other players around to draw a call. It was just Ari up front being brilliant. And Sheridan not only made the save that, I mean, a lot of keepers wouldn't have been able to get a glove to that, but she did so and pulled it in to where Ari didn't even get a chance at the second ball, yeah. Which I'm 90% sure she would have gotten a toe on.
Yeah.
Man. That one made me almost as mad as the goal being called back. And in the 90th minute, Millay almost punishes the way for giving her space, but sends it just over the bar. And in one of the rare instances where a call kind of went our way, that was offsides. One of the very few that we did not get called for. But altogether, Racing seemed to be fully in control of this game, even when they were not in possession. And I'm going to preface what I'm about to say, having already watched the Utah game. I think that the play that we saw in San Diego may, with a few tweaks, be Racing at its finest.
Mm.
Finally came together, and you asked if I thought they were a first half team, and they delivered for 98 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it was perfect, with the exception of we didn't get the damn goal.
Well, yeah, but we had the better chance of winning since we were the only team that put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah. One thing I'd also like to throw out there is Racing had better chances. Race in this wound up being pretty close, but it's the Wave kept taking low quality chances. I mean, there's they just peppered at goal, and you know. But to round out the second half, the Wave got 4 fouls called with no calls ignored. Racing got 7 fouls called with 5 ignored.
Yeah.
I don't mind a bad ref, but
it's tough to play 11 versus 14.
Well, but it's like my soccer coach, Andy Schwartz, told me, 2 things you can't control: the refs and the weather. Hey, at least the weather was nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, playing against a team destined to flop and refs that are more than willing to abide by that. I mean, we were fighting with one hand tied behind our back, and I still think we look like the better team. So it's really encouraging. I like what I saw here.
Stats for this game, as you mentioned, expected goals 1.1 for Racing, 1.0 for San Diego. It's a very, very, very close possession. You mentioned before the game that you're putting the over-under on Racing's possession at 45%, and that if Racing could hit 45% or better possession against a team like San Diego that plays very slowly and very possessively, that Racing would win the game. According to FBref, Racing ended with 43%, and it was a 0-0 draw. So pass accuracy, Racing was 76% passing to San Diego 79. It's a very even there. Shots, Racing had 12 shots with 4 on target. San Diego had 15 shots with 2 on target, going to your last point there as well. 2 offsides for Racing, none for San Diego. 1 corner for Racing, 3 for San Diego. Fun stats. This was Jack Harlow's first time at a Racing game. Finally. Racing also became the first team in NWSL history to start the season with 4 consecutive draws. If they had drawn against Buta, they would have been the first team in NWSL history to get 5 consecutive draws at any point in the season. So I'm glad they didn't get that one as well. And finally, Taylor Flint won 12 duels in this match, which was her 24th game with 10 or more. And that is more than anyone else since she joined the NWSL in 2021. We're going to talk about this a little later. Yep. Taylor Flint, is mighty good at soccer.
I would actually like to go back to one of those in the 14th minute where she just casually demolishes Alex Morgan.
Oh yeah.
That was warms my heart.
Yep. Predictions for this game. I had it as a 2-1 win. You had it as a 2-2 draw. FIFA had it as a 1-3 loss. Did anyone call a 0-0 accurately?
No. as a matter of fact, there was me and one other person that called it a draw at all.
Oh, wow.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Well, up next is the game that still has every racing fan buzzing. For the first time, Racing played a game during Thunder over Louisville, and I must say, I hope they get to do that every year. I want to commend the stadium staff and everyone involved with putting this on because I think it worked really, really well. That's my experience. It was a huge draw that saw Racing smash its attendance record with 11,365 people. I said in a previous episode that I didn't think Racing knew how to not be the underdog in a match, and they proved me wrong with this one. Bootaw came in as an expansion team sitting second to last on the table, and Racing wanted to make a statement. Also, interestingly, before the match even kicked off, due to other results earlier that day and the night before, Racing had moved from 9th to 7th without even touching a ball. I could write a 10-minute intro to this one, but there's a lot to cover, so let's dive right in. Ari Borges made her way back into the starting lineup for this game, taking the place of Raylan Turner, and that moved Alexa Barr centrally to the 9. Now, I'll skip ahead real quick. The first 6 minutes, Barr showed up centrally on the left and on the right. So the front line, as we've seen several games that so far this year, is fluid, and they'll move around as needed throughout the game. But the first note I actually had for this, it was very, very interesting, and I noticed it when I was there watching live, that as Racing lined up for the kickoff, they lined up 7 of their 10 outfield players on the halfway line. I don't know that I've ever seen that before. I don't think they usually line up that many and only left 3 back. But it told me Racing was ready to come out firing. But for about the first 18, 20 minutes, it was actually fairly even, but with Bootaw with more chances and a little more possession. In the 11th minute, they got a nice pass out wide to former perp Paige Monahan, who took a left foot shot, but put it completely wide. 13th minute, Laura Millay gets booked. Another one of those. Was it a foul? Maybe. Was it a yellow? Meh.
Yeah, she's stacking that stat for sure.
Yeah. 18th minute, ball gets fed in to Monahan, who gets a shot off, but Aaron Wright, with good recovery speed and a lovely slide, blocked it and cleared it out. She had a heck of a game. We'll talk about that more.
Yep.
26th minute, Big Perp has had enough. Taylor Flint fights off a challenge, gets the ball to DeMello, who passes it wide to Lauren Millay, who puts in a gorgeous cross far post into the box. Uchenna Kanu rises up and heads it home for her 4th of the season to make it 1-0. Sub note, how many times last season did we lament balls being sent to far post with no one there?
Right?
I mean, figured that out this year.
And they figured it out by plugging Uchenna Kanu back there. I would not have figured that to be the solution, but here we are.
I love it. All right. 30th minute, Aaron Wright enters the chat, getting increasingly frustrated at soft fouls going against Racing, starting to sense a theme. The ref was blowing his whistle anytime a Bootaw player fell over. Moments before that, Taylor Flint had expressed her displeasure, and this wouldn't be the last time during the game. 33rd minute, Taylor Flint gets the ball to Kanu, who puts a shot between the goalkeeper's legs but deflects off the post. On the ensuing corner, Taylor Flint gets a header that's saved off the line by goalkeeper Mandy Hott. And then Alexa Barr out wide burns her defender to get into the box, passes it to Millay, who first times the shot but puts it off the crossbar. Would have been a worldie from her, but instead, my defensive play of the game goes to the woodwork. All that whole sequence was like 2 minutes long.
Yeah.
That was NWSL after dark chaos, and it hadn't gotten dark yet. 37th minute, Savannah DeMello gets a yellow card for reasons.
I don't know. I wouldn't be inclined to contest that one.
I thought there was hardly anything in it. Yeah. 38th minute, Alexa Barr burns her defender again in the box, squares it to Ari, who gets off a shot, but it was an instinctive kick save by Mandy Hott. 40th minute, Taylor Flint intercepts a pass, finds Barr wide open just outside the box, and Barr attempts to chip the keeper, but scuffs the shot. She listened to my plea from our interview. I am now affecting gameplay.
Quit it.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's because you haven't listened to my interview with Alexa Barr from last week, so go listen to that. 41st minute. Taylor Flint called for another touch foul, and she was not having it. She had some words to say while the camera was on her face that I'm not going to repeat. Second minute of first half stoppage time. No foul called as Ari is taken out from behind and Buta retains possession, which led to the next minute, Centnor getting the ball over to Griffiths, who bypasses Pickett, gets a nice shot off to beat Lund to tie it 1-1. Pickett was covering two defenders on the outside because it looked like Connie was a little late getting back. So Griffiths faked wide, then cut back in to get the shot off. Now,
I mean, I have a hard time laying blame at the feet of any Racing player for this because flatly, Stintner shouldn't have had the chance to get the ball off because Ari got destroyed.
Yep. She got taken out from behind, no call, absolutely, and they retained possession. It led to a goal. I was livid when that happened live, and I watched it back because I always watch it back because, especially home games, I get very much into being a Homer fan.
Yeah,
but I watched it back and I was like, "Nope, I was right on that. Like, she got taken out; should have been a foul."
Yeah, I mean, it was two hands extended in front of her to push Ari's back. I'm baffled by that one.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I can think of is, well, she got to the ball. She wouldn't have gotten to the ball if she hadn't moved Ari over the ball.
Yeah.
So
you can't go through a player to get the ball.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of fans were upset at this point thinking, oh, here we go again. Racing's blown another lead for a tie. But the part they missed was that Racing hadn't gone up 2-0. I joked last episode that if Racing scores first, they should try maybe letting the other team score next rather than going up 2-0. They did that in this game, and look what happened. Just saying. All right, moving into the second half. 53rd minute. Raylan Turner and Emma Sears are subbed in for Uchenna-Kanu and Ari Borges. That's important for many reasons, not the least of which, it's an early double sub in the second half. In the last game, you mentioned, Emma Sears came on at halftime for Raylan Turner. So just wanted to point out, because I did mention it a couple weeks ago, that I was keeping an eye on Bev's sub patterns. And at this point, I got to say, I'm okay with it. 65th minute. Hal gets a nice tackle in the midfield, gets the ball forward, crossed into the box for DeMello, lays it off for Flint. Nice left-footed shot from outside the box that forced a save over the bar. 68th minute. Hey, did you realize it's still 1-1? Well, we can fix that. Hal gets the ball and sends a nice cross over to a wide-open bar, making a great run. Settles it nicely, takes a shot. Good reflex save by Mandy Hott, but blocks it back into the box. DeMello doing DeMello things, crashes in on the follow-up and buries it for a 2-1 lead. We've seen this before. Right place, right time by DeMello. It was just really nice that fighter jets were flying overhead at that exact moment. That was fun. Little did we know that the fireworks would start early in Lynn Family Stadium. And this is my offensive play of the game. I really was torn because I loved Emma Sears' individual effort on her goal. But I went with this one because of the beautiful run by Alexa Barr. Jalen Howell seeing it and executing that cross perfectly. Alexa Barr takes it down nicely, gets a shot off, and a really nice follow-up by DeMelo. There's just more people involved in it. It was just really pretty football. And it was the first goal for DeMelo since June of last year in the Spongeteenth game against Gotham. And finally, it was technically the game winner. So that is my offensive play of the game.
I really want to come back to Howell's vision on that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that one of the things that, you know, Howell is kind of pigeonholed as a destroyer, but her distribution is amazing. I mean, right now on the season, she's sitting on 66.7% accuracy on long passes.
That's really good.
I
do want to praise Alexa Barr for that run as well, because she was on the far side of the field from where the ball was, and she just looked up and saw no defenders in between her and the goal. So she just went, okay, started running her tail off, threw her hand up over to Howell, said, hey, look at this. Check this out. And Howell looked up and went, ooh. But the execution of that pass, and then the ability at a full sprint for Barr to chest that down straight to her feet and not like directly into Mandy Hott's hands or out of bounds, you know. And then the follow up by DeMelo. Like I said, she has done that last year. Just that follow up off a shot where she comes out of seemingly nowhere and gets the rebound and puts it in. So all of that, all of it, and more of it, please. All right, moving on. 72nd minute, because we got a lot more to do. 72nd minute, a yellow card for Buttaugh. It only took them grabbing Turner's jersey and throwing her to the ground. 74th minute, Kayla Fisher comes on for Barr. 75th minute, Emma Sears gets past her defender into the box, and some contact takes her out. No call initially, but VAR reviews it and calls it a penalty. Didn't look like much at first, especially from where I was sitting in the stadium. And I can understand why the ref didn't give it initially, because it did look like when Pogarsh went to ground, it looked like she got the ball and then took Emma Sears out. But VAR looked at it and said, ooh, she didn't get the ball. They sent the ref over the screen. He did not take very long to think about it, and he gave the penalty. I think this is actually really good use of VAR and the correct call.
Yeah. Looking at it live, I was actually a little confused why they were holding up the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, if Pogarch hadn't taken out Sears, she could have crossed that ball in. That was absolutely
the right
call. Yeah,
she could
have
still
gotten
to it before it went out. Absolutely.
So yeah, I agree. But yeah, VAR saves the day.
Yeah. Like I said, from where I was sitting, I saw the whole thing transpire. And I saw, you know, Pogarsh do a little slide tackle, which is always risky. And the ball kind of scurries away. And then Emma Sears goes down and there's no call. And I was like, oh, that was probably a good slide tackle. Then they're holding a play. I'm like, the only thing they can be holding this up for is to review for a penalty, which is great. And I was like, that'd be a really harsh penalty to give. But then seeing it back later and seeing that she never actually got the ball, I'm like, oh, yep, really good call. So 78th minute, here we are, and we still have three goals to talk about. First one is DeMelo stepping up and burying the penalty to make it 3-1. 81st minute, DeMelo has her first brace, but wants her first hat trick. Takes a nice shot, but puts it wide. 82nd minute, Allie Centner takes a nice shot from outside the box, but Lund, who is still somehow awake, parries it out for a corner. After that, Paige Monahan gets off a really nice shot from outside the box, but curls it just wide. 84th minute. Sears gets the ball to Flint in the box, puts a shot right at the keeper, and Marissa DeGrande comes in for Savannah DeMelo and immediately goes to work. 87th minute, 3 minutes later, she dribbled through what looked like three or four defenders, got the ball out wide to Pickett, who put in a gorgeous cross into the box. Far post, again, hey, headed in by Raylan Turner for her first professional goal. We're now up 4-1.
I had a note on this one that defender Lauren Flynn got posterized on that one.
Yes, she did. 4 minutes later, 91st minute, DeGrande gets the ball to Sears right at the halfway line, who then just does it all herself, dribbles all the way into the box using her speed and buries her shot for 5-1 for her first professional goal.
Furthering the character assassination of Lauren Flynn.
Fun story time. You ready?
Uh-huh.
I think I've brought this up on the pod before last year, but this is our fourth season with racing, my fourth season going to games at Lynn Family Stadium, and I have a personal rule. I never leave my seat while the ball is in play, meaning I am at my seat before the opening whistle and do not leave until a halftime whistle. I'm back at my seat before the second half whistle, and I sit in my seat until the final whistle. The reason is, in the last 3.5 years, any time I've ever left my seat, and this includes the Women Cup games from a couple years ago that racing wasn't even playing in, any time I've left my seat while the ball is in play, somebody has scored a goal. It's not always racing. And when I say every time, I'm talking like four times. Every single time someone has scored a goal if I leave my seat. Now, at the end of home games, having the fun little media pass that we get from doing this pod, I like to go down on the field for the post-match press conferences. My seats are directly across from the benches, which means I have to go all the way around the stadium to come down the ramp to get on the field. Normally, that's fine. As soon as the final whistle blows, I hop up and I start fast walking around. There were 11,000 people at the stadium for this game. And in about the 82nd minute, I realized, it was going to take me forever to get over there. So I got up and got a head start and ended up standing in the waterfront end from the 82nd minute on, which means Turner's goal and Sears' goal happened right in front of me. And it kept the streak alive because I got up from my seat while the ball was in play and somebody scored. It's like a superpower. If I could wield it always in racing's favor, I would, but it doesn't always go in racing's favor, so I'd never tempt fate. But that's it. A couple half-hearted attempts by Buttaw to close out the game, but this one had been done for a while. Stats on this one are actually kind of fun. Expected goals for racing, 3.8. I didn't go back and look. When do you ever remember racing having a 3.8 expected goals in a game?
I'd have to research that. I'm not sure. I don't think it's happened.
I am fairly certain it's never happened. Buttaw had 0.7. Possession in this game, 50-50. Passing, 81% pass accuracy for racing to Buttaw's 79%. 18 shots with 10 on target for racing. 10 shots and 2 on target for Buttaw. That means racing put in exactly half of their shots on target. That is stellar work. 2 offsides for racing, none for Buttaw. 3 corners for racing, 2 for Buttaw. I am also noticing this season, there might be one game out of these 5 where a racing opponent was called offside.
Interesting.
I might go back and look because that is a very strange stat. I feel like I've written 0 for racing opponents too many times so far this season. But getting into fun stats, most goals ever scored by racing in a match, largest margin of victory for racing ever in a match. First time racing has gone undefeated after the first 5 games of a season. Obviously, the first win for Bev Yanez as a head coach. We mentioned Savannah DeMello's first professional brace, which is 2 goals in a game for those that are keeping track at home. Also, DeMello became racing's all-time leading scorer, surpassing Dr. Nadia Nadine. You want to hear the wildest stat that this blew my mind and I did go back and check and it is right?
Oh, I bet I know what this is.
The first assist for Carson Pickett as a racing player.
Mm-hmm.
She had none last year. Like, how did I miss that?
Well, I mean, you can't get assists from nobody scoring goals.
Well, that's true. So racing moved up to 5th place in the table with this win. But after Chicago won on Sunday, racing now sits in 6th. Getting into predictions, Cody, both you and Alexa Barr predicted this as a 2-0 win. I was a little more bullish in calling it a 3-0 win, and I still didn't get the margin right. FIFA was a no-show this week because I found out that Bhutan and BayFC are not in the game yet. So no submission from FIFA this week. Did anyone predict this score correctly?
I'll tell you what. There was only one person that called that there was going to be 6 goals. But it was, they called it 4-2. However, excluding us, there were 24 win margins. So a whole lot of people just got on the board for the first time.
Well,
including
me.
You.
I was going to ask, did anyone predict a draw in this game?
No.
No, it was all wins.
Yeah.
Yep. I really thought that might be the case with this game. I was going into this game feeling very confident, and I did have to temper myself a little bit. Like, this is still the NWSL. And in that first, like, 15, 18 minutes where Bhutan had a couple chances, I was like, oh, come on. But then happiness and sunshine and rainbows and fireworks and then more fireworks afterwards. So, leaderboard. Who's are you in first place at this point?
Yes, narrowly. Second place with 4 points is tied between 4 people. And then behind that, third place is tied with another 4.
Fun.
So,
Yeah. Lots of parity in our little prediction league.
I like it.
All right, well, there's the whistle for halftime, which means it's time for halftime adjustments. There were 2 player rumors floating around this past week that we would like to address. First up, it's Madeline Desiano. 24-year-old defender was recently waived by Houston and was seen in Louisville hanging out with former UCLA teammate Raylan Turner. The obvious assumption here was that she would be signed to replace the injured Ellie Pikiamsa. We have confirmed that she is training with the team, but no decision has been made as of the time of this recording on whether or not she will be signed. Quick reminder, injury replacement can be made outside the trade window, and Ellie currently is not counting against the roster cap of 26.
So I went back and tried to work up some stats for Desiano. It was actually kind of difficult. She only had 4 appearances for a grand total of 23 minutes. So to do the eye test, I had to go back to UCLA days, which there's a lot of really good footage, including hilariously a good one where she plays in an assist to Raylan Turner.
Nice.
Had a little stint with the U.S. youth national team at 3 different levels. And really, altogether, it doesn't seem like it would be a bad depth signing. You know, I can only go from college stats, which really do not translate well to the NWSL. So it was all eye test. And really, she seems to be an efficient and diligent defender. But, you know, all I've got to go off of are highlights. So I'm a little hesitant to really lean into an opinion of her.
All right. Well, the second rumor was a pretty big one. 22-year-old Brazilian forward Jennifer was rumored to be making a move away from Corinthians to Racing. I found this one interesting as A, we're pretty deep in attack, and B, it would mean moving someone out to clear roster space. So I didn't think much of it, but it turns out where there's smoke, there is sometimes actually fire. This move was scrapped as the price tag was simply higher than the club deemed worthy, but it begs an interesting question. Who would have been let go had the trade materialized? What do you think?
I think that there'd be a couple of valid people that you'd have to look at. One of the first in my mind is Kayla Fisher. She does pretty good work in the midfield. Doesn't get a whole lot of minutes. She put us on the hook for that callback goal at against San Diego. And her contract's up at the end of the year. So that would probably be one. And another one.
Not expecting that name, but go ahead.
Parker Goins, just not getting any time. And again, not contracted past the end of this year. So I don't know. That is a decision I would not want to make.
Yeah. The two names I had were Matty Pokorny. She's seen few minutes this year, but she's versatile and can play in several positions, not only in attack, but midfield and defense as well. And her contract runs through next year. I also had Parker Goins for the same reasons. Very few minutes this year, primarily plays a striker or wing, contract through this year. I would think that if Racing is looking to bring in a new attacking player or striker, that Parker Goins, it's more like for like, in and out. So she would be my guess. So another real quick conversation around this, though. Houston Dash traded away Maria Sanchez to San Diego for something like $500,000. Houston then just acquired defender Tarcien from the same Corinthians team for an undisclosed fee, which I believe is rumored to be around that same $500,000.
It was confirmed by Corinthians.
At 500?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like Corinthians was wanting a similar price tag for Jennifer, and that just isn't in Racing's business model. For example, we acquired Taylor Flint this offseason, and she is showing that she is one of the best midfielders in the league and the world, and she only cost Racing $150,000. We are moneyballing this, and I'm okay with it.
I'm inclined to agree. I mean, I think it's just being shrewd, just because, you know, there's all these buckets of money to throw around doesn't mean that we need to.
I mean, we have to. We're doing quite well without doing that. So,
I mean, if the dollar amount was just too high because, you know, the player just isn't worth $500,000, then fine. But, you know, I do have to be a little concerned whether or not, you know, we can't pay it. So I don't know. It's one of those things that I'm sure that we could have made the money work somehow, but it's like, do you really want to deplete your war chest like that?
I mean, Jennifer's 22. She only just started getting call-ups from the Brazilian national team. Like, that's a gamble.
Earlier this month was her debut.
Literally this month. So that's a huge gamble for that big of a price tag. I very much respect the team not going that route. So, mentioned Taylor Flint, who has been balling out, which is a very nice segue into our last halftime topic. You wanted to go over some year-to-date stats, and she was one that specifically you wanted to talk about.
It is truly staggering, the number of stats that she is in the top five for. But it turns out that Racing has stats leaders all over the place. And before I come around to Taylor Flint, I would like to point out a couple of stats that I am a little shocked by in a good way. Year to date, Racing currently sits in third overall in XG from open play.
Wow.
Behind Kansas City Current and Washington Spirit.
What a stark contrast from last year.
Yeah. And out of the two above us, we have an XG of 7 with 8 goals to show. Kansas City Current has an XG of 8.03 with 14. And Washington Spirit with an XG of 7.12 only has 6.
Wow. We are also the third highest FOT Mob rated team so far this season with those same two teams above us.
And the one thing that has tracked from last year to this year is the sucker punch style of play. Mm-hmm. Yet again, Racing is the fastest team in transition, and it's not particularly close. If you forgive the outlier of Kansas City running right behind us, the next nearest is almost 0.3 meters a second slower against our 2.1.
Yeah, they don't have an MSCers.
I mean, it's not just Emma. A lot of that is our fast transition passing too.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw from the very first game that in Colombia, the link up play to move the ball expeditiously up the field. I mean, it had to be the bulk of their work in the offseason. And to follow up on that, there are three Louisville players in the top 10 for expected goals per 90. Number two, Emma Sears with 0.79, just an absolute terror. Fellow rookie Turner is tied for ninth with 0.49. And DeMello, right between, tied for fifth at 0.59. I mean, I can't describe to you how good it feels to be on such a high mark with that stat, considering how, frankly, awful our scoring has traditionally been. I mean, it's downright cursed.
Well, I'm gonna piggyback that if you'll indulge me interrupting. Shots on target per 90. Emma Sears is tied for first at 2.3, tied with Sophia Smith. You know who's in third? Braylon Turner with 2.2. That's shots on target per 90. And then successful dribbles per 90. Emma Sears in first with 6.9. Second place has 5.0. And then Kayla Fisher's in third with 4.4. So, I mean, this is... not only is Racing showing up in a lot of these, our two rookies are leading the league in certain stats. So what else you got? Because there's more.
So on the subject of the great acquisition that is Taylor Flint, she is really high up on a lot of different statistics, much like Carson Pickett last year, where she was top 1, 2, 3 on like 8 different stats. Taylor Flint, right there with her. The first one up, she is number 1 overall with tackles won, with 16. Teammate Jalen Howell is tied for 6th with 11. She is tied for 1st with dribblers tackled with 11. She is tied for 7th with Jalen Howell for blocks at 11. She is 1st overall with interceptions at 24. I would like to point out that number 2 only has 16.
Those long legs, man.
She also, however, and this one kind of warms my heart a little bit. She is tied for 4th with Jalen Howell for fouls committed. And I have to say that I absolutely was undersold on Flint as an acquisition in the offseason. Her numbers last year really did not do her justice.
She was injured for most of last year.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's why I was trying to stack it for per 90s when I was looking at it. But still not... she didn't have a whole lot of sizzle. Mm. And I think she may have felt that she was being underutilized, and that's why she wanted to get out.
I was just going to say the same thing.
So, yeah. Taylor, if you listen to this, I'm sorry.
Taylor, friend of the pod, if you're listening to this, I'm not sorry, because I knew what we were getting with you and how special it was from day one. All right, moving into the second half. Racing is away for the next two games. It's the only downside of the show that they put on in the last game in front of a record crowd. Everyone's talking about, man, we hope that brings more people back to games, and it's going to be 3 weeks before they play at home again. First up, Gotham away this Sunday, April 28th at 5 p.m. Eastern. Available on NWSL Plus and locally on Wave 3. Racing actually leads the all-time head-to-head. 2 wins, 5 draws, 1 loss. And I'm not including the Women's Cup Columbia. These are league games. Gotham is currently sitting in 11th place with 1 win, 2 draws, and 2 losses. They do have a bunch of injuries, but remember when everyone said that this was going to be a super team? What happened?
Yeah, well, for all the money that Bruce Wayne spent putting together the Justice League, it's not that.
So far, yet, anyway. And hopefully it remains that way for at least another week.
So, looking at the last two games, I have changed how I do this slightly. For shots and shots on target, I'm going to be doing averages to bring it more in line with the rest of the stats instead of giving a total.
Makes sense. That makes sense.
Gotham is a team with 57% aggregate possession. 13 shots, 4 shots on target on average.
That's not great.
But their pass accuracy, 76%. That's pretty low for a team that
with that much possession.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really makes you wonder what they're doing.
Yeah. With it. What do they do with it? They're just like standing on the ball.
A couple of new stats that I'm also bringing in, because I think it tells the tale a little better. In the last two games, they have an expected goals of 1 and an expected goals against of 1.6. So quite flatly, the numbers are telling the tale of a team that holds on to the ball just long enough for the other team to steal it and score on them.
Long enough for Jalen Howell or Taylor Flint to bulldoze them off of it.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at how they got here, it's really odd because they've been able to hang with a team flying as high as the Current and then tanked to the Spirit. A little less hot, but still respectable. The game with the Current, it was a 1-1 draw at home. Kansas City goal in transition, which it looks exactly like the game plan that we've got for running emissaries behind their back line.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't fix that, you know, there is the potential that we are going to harm them badly. And the only goal that they got back was Esther being unmarked on a corner. I'd like to think that our defenders are a little more canny than that.
And taller.
And they followed it up losing to the Spirit, which, gotta be honest, they're ones that I feel are underproducing, but I can't tell why yet.
Yeah.
But they're producing enough to put Gotham away 2-0. And really, you can just kind of say Croy Bethune just showed out.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think really is something that may play to our favor, their defensive line is shaky. In the 64th minute, there was almost a goal from the Spirit from just a simple goalie error. You know, the little drops or not pulling the ball in that every keeper, not Katie Lund, commits on to time to time. And that's just one of those things that every time I see it, it makes me wonder, because I called that out for the Portland game and I hit the nail on the head with that one. I don't think it's quite to that degree, but it does make me think that if we've got, you know, a Savannah DeMello prowling inside the box for one of those, it's going to get put away.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Spirit's second goal was from a penalty for handball inside of the box. So, I mean, sloppy defending and a goalkeeper that might be a little careless. I really, really, really want to think that we're just going to absolutely show out, but I think that Gotham is going to try to park the bus, although with them, it'd be more of a struggle buggy. And I think we're only going to squeak one by them. So I'm calling it a 1-0 win.
Okay. Similar reasons. They've been struggling. And I hope that they continue to struggle, like I said, for at least another week. Racing's coming off just an historic win. And multiple things from that game against Buttah is that Racing went ahead early, like they've done all season. They lost the lead. And then they figured out how to regain the lead. They realized not only can they do it, they can do it with multiple goals. So the confidence booster, breaking the dam, whatever you want to call it, I'm calling this a 2-1 win for Racing.
I like it.
Yep. All right. Up next is Orlando away, Sunday, May 5th at 5 p.m. Eastern, also on NWSL+. Racing also leads this all-time head-to-head with 3 wins, 4 draws, and 2 losses. Orlando sits just above Racing in 5th place. I said in preseason that they would be our closest competitor on the table, and so far that's playing out. Essentially, the only difference between Orlando and Racing is one goal. They have one more win and one fewer draw. And I want to say it was they won 1-0 against San Diego, right? And we tied 0-0. That's the difference so far this season between Orlando and Racing. If you,
that goal they called back. Yeah.
Yeah. But they've added some attacking pieces and are doing well. Also, this is away in Orlando. No team has won the head-to-head matchup on the road. I'll save my last sentence for after you do your preview.
All right. So looking at the last two, they've got a 47% aggregate possession, 17 shots on average, and 6 shots on target. Passable. What really stands out to me is an 83% pass accuracy.
That's pretty good.
So they've got a good network built up, and they know how to use it. Their expected goals for the last two games is 2.5, with an opposing expected goals against of 0.3.
What?
Yeah. They're good. They're real good. Well, let's be fair. The game 2 games ago was the Royals. And they won 1-0 in Utah, where Marta was just left unmarked inside of the box.
Only winning one. Can you imagine only beating Buttah by 1-0?
The bad part is that wasn't the game that padded those stats. The 1-0 win on the wave, they thoroughly and systematically destroyed them at every level. But they, playing in Orlando, they still only won 1-0. And it was just a fox in the box goal after a sustained attack. So here's the other side of that fun stat, where I was talking about, you know, how good Racing's been on the XG front. The Orlando Pride have an XG of 6.72. As much possession as the Pride has and how much XG they're generating, it doesn't actually turn out that they score many goals.
Yeah.
So I want to say that there's a very real chance that we're going to break the curse, but I think only barely. I'm calling it a 1-1 draw.
Okay. What I was getting at in my little intro was that they've added some attacking pieces. They've got Barbara Banda down there now. It's away in Orlando. No team in this head-to-head matchup has ever won on the road. I don't think that's going to change this time. And in fact, I think this could be Racing's first loss of the season. I'm calling a 1-0 loss.
The only reason why I didn't go that direction, This is actually going to be Orlando's third game in 8 days. And between rotation and tired legs, I just don't think that they're going to be able to keep us contained.
Fair. I also have to not pick the same results as you, or I won't ever catch you on our prediction game. I'm sticking with it, even if I'm wrong. I don't care. All gas, no brakes. All right. Moving into stoppage time now. A couple notes here. Today, it was announced that the USL Super League, remember them, got its first player signings. Tampa Bay Sun FC signed Erica Timrak, Jordan Listro, and Dominique Richardson, all of whom have NWSL experience. Biggest name on that list for me is Erica Timrak. What are your thoughts?
I agree with that entirely. Erica Timrak, midfield most recently with Orlando Pride, with 173 appearances and 21 goals. I mean, this is a true NWSL vet. What I find interesting is that the reason she's no longer with the Pride is they terminated the contract by mutual consent to allow her to pursue other opportunities. Now, what that means could be anybody's guess, but much the same as most other times, it basically comes down to the player probably isn't getting enough minutes and the team is perfectly willing to let them go to free up roster space.
Mm-hmm.
But this does track with what we were talking about, you know, players that aren't really up to snuff in the NWSL are going to find a place to land. The second name, I'll go with Demi Richardson, defender, 44 appearances, last seen with Gotham in 2022. She had a season-ending injury that year, and her option was declined. She's got some pretty good stats. I was actually kind of surprised that she couldn't find a place to land in the last year, but she's certainly going to be a welcome addition in Tampa. The third name, and the reason I wanted to do this one last, is it brings up an interesting question. Jordan Listro, midfielder, also most recently with the Pride, 41 appearances. She is, according to the NWSL, a restricted free agent. But going to the Super League, it doesn't matter what her offers are.
Mm-hmm.
So it
be the same as Emily Fox was a restricted free agent and left for England.
Yeah. And now you don't have to get on a plane to get out of that restricted tag. So is it because she wasn't going to get time with the Pride, or was it because she didn't like the fact that Orlando could keep her there just by matching an offer? Don't know, but it does definitely offer an interesting take on the power dynamic that the players have now that NWSL isn't the only game in town, literally. So, yeah, fascinating. I really don't like the idea of the dueling Division Ones, but this last bit, I think, could be really good for the players. And, of course, more soccer is better. So,
Sure. Yeah,
I'm watching this, how this plays out, with great interest.
Yeah, and like we've said, we're keeping an eye on it. Anytime stuff pops up, we promised we would keep everyone informed. So there we go.
So one last thing that I needed to bring up, because someone did ask for it. A few episodes back, I think it was our final preseason episode, I said that the NWSL Plus app was on Google Play. It's not. And it's kind of funny how that one played out. If you'll remember last year, while we were trying to figure out whether Ellie Jean was actually going to be coming to Racing or not, I had less than 24 hours to bring up a character write-up for her. And it got me thinking. I'm a big nerd. So I was actually working with one of my friends and putting together a search bot where I can just plug in a name and I get all my results that I usually get put together, and then it reads it and kind of gives me a document. Well, it's still not 100%, but it was good enough to where I could point it at play.google.com and sniff for search results for NWSL Plus. Well, a couple days before we record the episode, I get a hit. I go and look. It downloaded the NWSL app. Huh. Cool. I'll go check that out here in a little bit. Well, it turns out that it downloaded the NWSL app that originally existed. I'm kind of figuring that they put in a note somewhere in there that said, this is not NWSL Plus. The result came up. I downloaded it. So yeah, bad robot. My bad.
Is that it?
Yeah, sorry. I thought.
Before we started recording, Cody says, hey, right at the end, I've got a thing that I need to talk about. I'm like, okay. Didn't tell me anything. And there it was.
Yeah. I'd gotten questions, and so I had to address it. That's all.
Okay. All right. Well, there's the final whistle, thankfully, which means that that is all the time we have for this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't yet, be sure to check out my interview with Alexa Barr. Enjoy the Derby, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. Later, y'all.
Lavender Louisville is brought to you by Joe Havelda and Cody Roof. Music by Tyler Lance Walker Gill. Logo design by Ryan Simpson. Contact Lavender Louisville on Twitter at LavenderLVL or email lavenderlouisville@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.